Bookers, come on down. You have stumbled upon a pot of word salad at the bottom of a sometimes inappropriate rainbow. At the controls are indie authors Cintra Sullivan, Kay Banning Kellum, and David Atherton Cooper. I'd like to say they know what they're doing, however, as the official voiceover guy, I have sworn an oath of fealty. Welcome to the What the Book podcast, where scripts and pants are optional.
Hello, bookies. I here. Welcome to What the Book today on my Sunday afternoon, sitting in the back of my office, still in my jammies today. Aren't you lucky, bookers? It's quite a look, I tell you. Of course, there is David here and Caleb. We're all three trio. Hi, guys.
Hey,
today is an adventure on more levels than one. If you've been following me or the guys on Twitter, or of course the What the Book podcast page on Twitter, you will know that I am about to get my D&D cherry popped. I have never Dungeons and Dragons in my life. I don't know. I mean, I'm old enough to have done this, but I don't know what memo I missed or what calling I missed, but I never got into the craze. So the boys are totally going to nerd out and take me along with them for the journey. I hope that it's as funny as it's going to be. And I hope that I don't die within the first 10 minutes. Our characters are picked and we are ready to go. So I am going to hand over to Caleb, our dungeon master for the evening, and let's get this show on the road.
That is right. Good evening, nerds and nerdettes. It is me, Kay Banning Kellum, and tonight I am the Bard of Schlock because I will be walking these two nerds through some dungeons and some dragons.
Excuse me, one nerd and a nerd in training. I think we should be
I am a learner plate nerd.
We'll get you onto your P plates. Don't worry. We'll get you there.
You guys are going to be addicted to the damn show.
I was about to say, you're going to want to play this again. I started playing Dungeons and Dragons when I was a teenager. I would get stoned as fuck and play this game with my cousin and his friends. And this is something I told Cintra. I was like, if stoned 14-year-old Caleb could figure out how to play this game, then fucking anybody can figure out how to play this. Yeah. So what I have done, for those of you listening who are experienced players at this game, you're going to notice that this is an extremely dumbed down, kind of bare bone campaign. One, it has to kind of fit time. And yeah, it is just kind of to get Cintra into the game a little bit, to get David caught back up. He says he hasn't played in quite some time. So one thing I used to love to do is make up homebrew campaigns. So this was very easy for me to do kind of outside the books and just come up with something very simple. Mm-hmm. So characters have been rolled and equipment and everything has been selected. And we are, if everybody's ready to start, then we shall begin.
I'm taking a deep breath, bookers. I apologize for anybody that goes, what the hell is Cintra doing on this show? I am trying. All right. Take me, Caleb.
Bring it on.
All right. All right. So, you guys, this campaign will take place in a region known as Orus Tor. This is a campaign kind of picture that I made up a long time ago, and I kind of always visit it over and over again. And you start out in the small town of Lycra. Lycra is, to give you guys kind of a mind's eye picture of it, it is that stereotypical small D&D town. Cintra, if you're not quite sure what that means, you know, think it's got the one tavern, which doubles as an inn. It's got a couple of shops. It's got the surly bartender that's always standing there wiping the glass and just seems to know everything about what's going on. It's got a couple of corrupt guards, and it's got a poster board up in the bar with little tasks and requests from the local town government and such. Lycra falls. Orus Tor itself was kind of meant to be this kingdom of wealth and brilliance. It was kind of man-made in the sense that settlers came to this continent to make this big, beautiful kingdom. It didn't happen through natural civilization. It just was like it was a project, essentially. They got the capital city put together quite nicely, and then a whole bunch of smaller cities as you went south down the continent. Unfortunately, the further down south you went, the less money they had to keep going, and Lycra wound up being the southernmost and last attempt at constructing a town. So it got none of the beauty and polish of the northern cities. It's just kind of like the last bastion of civilization.
So we're in the Wild West, D&D style.
Right. You're surrounded by woods.
My ass doesn't look good in Lycra, but now you're describing the town. It's working for me really well. That's all right. Go on.
So, you know, it's surrounded by woods. They didn't get a chance to deforest that area very well once they got down there. There was a great road that started at the capital city, obstinately named Symphony. And then you had other little towns as you went, all with other similar pretty musical type names. And then finally, when you got to Lycra, I'm pretty sure they meant to call it Lyrica or something like that. And they just kind of got lazy and just got the L-Y part, right? And didn't even care enough to try and fix the name. They said, screw it, Lycra means something, I'm sure. It doesn't fit the musical tone of the rest of the city. And that only made the people there over the generations feel more disenfranchised. So that's one of the problems as to why, with these issues that come up, like the one that you're about to find out about, that's why the small little mayor of Lycra, that's why he can't just send a courier up north to the capital city and say, hey, we need help, send down some federal guards to help us, you know, deal with this. No, the citizens don't have any faith in the capital because the capital is kind of a band. Send the tax man down there, you know, every year right on time. And so, yeah, there's a pretty big divide in this little town versus how they view the royals and the nobles up north. So they don't want to ask them for help. So they have a few town guards. A couple of them were actually hired and trained by, you know, by the capital. A lot of them were just, you know, Minutemen after that just kind of volunteered. So you don't have a good city patrol. You know, you have a couple of dopes standing at the gate, and you have a couple of dopes walking around, but they do not have the manpower or training or equipment to even send out their own people, which is unfortunate because they've had a real problem, which you two are about to find out about as you find yourself seated at the Dirty Sheets, which is the only tavern in town. Aptly named.
Oh, God.
And
the Dirty Sheets.
Leading in, we'll say it's about mid-afternoon. And we'll start with David. What are you doing?
So I think I've heard that there's these requests for help and tasks in the bar, but so I'm gonna go and look down the message board, and I think I might I'm looking for what's going on in this place. There's something kind of strange happening in town, and I've been feeling a bit. You know, I'm getting a vibe ever since I've been in town that there's something going on. So I'm going to go check out these tasks on the message board in the Dirty Sheets.
All right, and just for fun, give me a perception check. Pick a number between 1 and 20.
We'll go 15.
15. Ooh, I was thinking 4. So.
Oops.
That's quite a miss.
Guess I didn't notice whatever that was.
So
I'm going to go to the message board. Yep.
So you're standing at the message board, and you, as you are studying, you notice that there is mostly everything up here is just written in common. There's not a whole lot of you're the only half elf that you've seen since you've walked into this town. There are the most common races that you notice. There's a lot of humans. There's a small, you know, amount of dwarves. There's a good amount of orcs. And they all kind of get along, though. Everybody seems to just kind of be embracing the suck together. But elves, you have not seen very many of. It's almost like they think they're too good to live down Lycra, which they probably are.
I'm probably going right, to be so while you're back, it's keeping time my to head down, just being a half elf. I don't really want to draw attention to that.
As your head is down and you're studying the board, Sintra, your character is in the bar as well. And what are you doing? Why are you there?
Oh, she'll be drinking. I'd totally be drinking. I assume that Lycra, the Dirty Sheets, by the standard that you're describing, possibly only serves ale. That would be it.
You can get... get beer, or you can get something that they call whiskey. But
I mean,
it's
they're not going to give
like,
me a cosmopolitan, so
it's whiskey spelled with like two I's, so you're not quite sure what that means. But they have that.
Hello, look. I'm going to go beer, and I'm going to be sitting in the corner, because I don't really care about an awful lot.
All right, well, you're sitting over there getting your drink on.
Hmm.
All right. David, you notice from looking at the board that there seems to be the one common, like most of the stuff that's written up there, you can see was written by townspeople, maybe asking for help with stupid stuff like, you know, my dog is missing or a wolf keeps stealing my fucking cattle or some shit. nothing too interesting. The only note you see that's written like an extremely legible handwriting that seems to have an official kind of seal above it is and definitely the largest and speaks with the most urgency, talks about the missing children and urges you to go see the city marshal if you're interested in assisting with that. Centra, give me a perception check as well. Pick a number between 1 and 20.
11.
Okay, I was thinking 15. That's close enough to where you have noticed that since you've arrived in this town, and we'll say that you've come down from the north as you've just been kind of wandering about. You said you got a grandmother in this town, so there's a reason for you to stop off. You've noticed that in most of the towns that you've passed through, there are, you know, more robust families. You see children running around. When you got to Lycra, you've noticed that there, you know, that the few children you do see are pretty much kept within like 5 feet of the front door of their homes. The parents are out there looking, you know, very suspicious, especially you as a stranger. When you walked in, you noticed that most people didn't really pay much attention to you as you walked by places like shops and vendors. But if you walked past anybody with their kid, they would look at you and just scoop up their kid like you were about to just snatch them up and fly away.
There's an uneasy energy.
Well, I mean, that you just also physically notice that people are just very protective of their kids when you pass by, but not when other people walk by that I guess have lived in the town longer. So it's kind of the stranger danger thing, but really taken to
the next level. But just maybe because she's an elf.
Well,
if you would have passed your perception check, David, you would have noticed they were doing the same thing to you.
I'm not meant to know this. I'm like, damn.
That's player knowledge, not character.
No, Mandrake's happily reading his new quest, and he's thinking about going to go and talk to the mayor about where he signs up.
All right, very nice. Well, as you're standing up there reading it, you suddenly hear both of you, well, pretty much everybody in the bar hears a loud crash as the batwing doors are kicked in by a rather grungy looking guy wearing kind of beat up leather armor-ish. He's got like long curly hair, like the little patchy beard and the pox marks. He looks like crap. But when the other patrons of the bar see him come in, followed by two goons behind him, everybody starts kind of giving this guy a wide kind of path. You notice this, Sentry. You notice this, and you know, you guys have no idea who this character is. Everyone else seems to know him, though, and they back off from him. As he walks past you, David, he looks you up and down. He gives you that long stare. He walks past you, Sentry, also gives you a long stare. He walks up to the bar, orders a round of drinks for him and his two buddies, and says that you two can cover it as part of the visitor's tax. So the bartender's looking at you with his hand out like, hey, are y'all paying this dude's yeah, no idea who this guy is, right?
Yeah, sorry my friend, I'm all taxed up for the week, but you enjoy your drink.
He stands up, he looks at his two buddies, he's like, oh, you tell they're new in town. He goes, Ace Lundy, don't you go over there and help tax this gentleman aggressively.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if it's aggressively, then I will happily loosen my sword in its sheath and stand my ground.
Okay. So, are you going to take that half turn to draw?
Yeah.
All right. As you're drawing your sword out, these two guys are advancing on you. They're kind of chuckling at you when they see you pull out your sword. This is, you get the idea that this is something that they've done quite a few times. They knock tables over as they go. And by the time they get within your threat range, most of the other bar patrons have fled out the door. They don't want to even see this. The bartender's crouched behind the bar. Sentry, you're still sitting at your table. What do you have any interest in this so far?
I'm watching intently. I look at the man who the leader of the three of them, the burly one standing up at the bar, who declared that we should pay for his drinks. Look, I'm gonna bat my eyelashes a little, and I'm gonna play a little feminine charm, smile softly, maybe loosen the top rope on my cloak a little, and perhaps suggest that he buy a lady a drink instead.
All right. So in D&D, this would be a bluff check. So give me pick a number between 1 and 20.
Me?
Yes, you. You are attempting to bluff this.
Okay, rightio. 7.
Ooh, I was thinking 18.
Ah, screw that.
He looks at you like not. He's, I ain't buying what you're selling. Instead of getting turned on, he actually walks over to you and knocks your drink to the ground.
Yeah.
And he says, when you pick that up, make sure you put a couple of coins on the table for my drink. Your friend over there has already signed his death warrant. Don't make me hurt your pretty face.
I think at this point, Mandrake is just audibly muttering a brief prayer to his God to forgive these fools, for they know not what they do, and I'm getting ready for a fight.
All right, so you have an opportunity to take a burst action before we roll initiative if you want to go ahead and declare an attack now.
I'm not going to wait for them. No, let's even the odds a bit. Let's take out the first one.
All right, so you got Ace and Lundy. Ace is a human-looking character, really grungy-looking, real scrawny dude. Mm. And then the guy Lundy is an orc, but he is like the most unhealthiest-looking orc you've ever seen. Like, he is also very tall and gawky. He does not fit the typical orc look at all. So you're going to go for Ace?
I'll go for the bigger one. I'll go for Lundy.
Okay, Lundy the Orc. Here we go. Go ahead and roll for your attack. Number between 1 and 20, please.
I'm going to go 11.
That is exactly what I was thinking. Natural 20.
Oh.
And I've got a plus 1 to hit and damage. So
there you go. So go ahead and roll your... let's see. So pick a number between... Or do you want me to... I have all the dice. Do you want me to just roll the D10 for your damage? Or do you want to...
You might as well roll the dice for damage. Let's do that one.
All right, let me get out my D10. God, I got so many of these guys. Here we go. Look at this big, sexy guy. All right, with the plus 1. So you do 6 damage to him, and he is completely shocked that somebody has not only fought back, but fought back somewhat craftily. All right, at this point, go ahead. Do you want me to roll initiative for you, or do you want to pick the number?
We'll do pick a number. What are we, 1 to 6?
No, for your initiative, because now it's going to start the battle. So 1 through 20 for initiative.
For initiative, let's go 7.
I was thinking 6. All right, so that puts you at a 19, very high. Lundy gets a 13, and Ace gets a 3. So it'll go you, Lundy, Ace. Sintra, are you going to join in any of the combat, or what? You're still sitting down while Fat and Smelly Dude is standing over you?
Look, I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm totally nerding out and not in a good way.
Well, you can do whatever you want. So you can join the fight. You can attack. I mean, hell, technically you could attack David's character
in the face.
Wanted to. How would you deal if you were in a bar? This is the easiest way when you're new at it, is just use yourself as kind of the benchmark. So if you were in a bar as Sentra Sullivan, and some fat, sweaty, nasty dude came in and started behaving this way towards you, and then stomped over your table and slapped a drink off and told you to pick it up and then pay for his drink, how would you respond to that in real life?
In real life, I'd stand up, take a hold of his nuts, and tell him to back off before I rip them off. And that's real life.
Also in, So in D&D, now you can kind of transfer that over. Your character would stand up and try and fucking bap this dude back to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah.
You might want to cast a magic missile on his bollocks or something first.
Well, you definitely want to probably stand up first.
That'll
be
up.
The pro tip for it. Yeah.
All right.
All right, since you and old Brisbane there, we'll say that's the boss man's name, mm-hmm. that came in. Since you guys have not gotten into the initiative, you can take a burst round against him if you want to go ahead and declare an attack on him right off the bat.
Yes, let's do that. Let's declare an attack on him.
So you have your three, you had the four spell options, and you also have your staff. So how do you want to attack him?
What do I do? What can I do with my staff?
You can hit him.
Smack him.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
can I hit him with the staff? You're now rolling. Right, so you'll be rolling an attack now to try and beat his AC, his armor class.
No.
To see if you hit him. So go ahead and pick a number between 1 and 20.
2.
Oh, I was thinking 19.
Caleb, you're killing me.
Yeah. You swing that staff, you know, just like in those, like in the old Looney Tunes cartoons when Daffy Duck was spinning the staff around trying to impress the Porky Pig character. Yeah, you kind of go into that number. You fly across the room.
Oh, God.
Completely missing him. He goes ahead. He draws a club that he has on his back, like axe style, and he's going to go ahead and give me a balance check. Give me a number between 1 and 20, Sentra.
17.
Okay, I was thinking 14. Close enough, you don't fall flat on your face. You do manage to keep your footing and turn around to face him. So you miss, but you come out of it gracefully enough. To where you guys can just both do an initiative at this point.
Okay.
Go ahead and pick a number between 1 and 20 one more time.
10.
All right. He rolled a 14 for his initiative, so he will go before you. So the order of the battle now will go David, Lundy, Ace, Brisbane, and Central last. All right, so David, you are on top of this, man. You are you're in attack range for both Ace and Lundy.
Okay. Do I see what's going on in the rest of the bar at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, you can. That's a simple enough spot check to be able to see that. You know, the only other person that stayed in here with you.
He's getting stressed as well. Okay, I'm going to try and take out this Lundy guy then. I'll carry on with the big guy. And
all right.
I'll try and keep him between me and Ace so he can't get a good smack at me, but yeah, that'll come if it does. Okay, yep, no, I'm gonna go for Lundy again.
All right, 1 in 20.
8.
All righty, I was thinking 11, so you do hit. And let's see, so that'll be that good old 10 again.
D10 plus 1.
And you do a total of 6 damage to him. He goes down.
Good.
He is not dead, but he is unconscious.
Excellent. That's how we deal with bullies around here. Mr. Ace.
I'm actually going to do an intimidation check on Ace to see how he responds to that. He gets nervous. He is not quite... He hasn't expected this. I guess these three have been running around kind of doing things their way for a while now. People have not fought back this effectively, at least. So he is he's not quite sure what to do. He takes one step back and goes flat-footed. Take an attack of opportunity.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to roll 13.
All right, I was thinking 10 right on the dot, so go ahead and take that hit, and let's see. Oh, perfect. Now you hit him for 11. Yeah, you hit him flat-footed. He goes prone at this point. He falls down. He's not dead or unconscious yet, but he is definitely going to have to waste a turn getting back up. All right, the Brisbane guy is looking around. He is kind of shocked. He can't believe shaking down two strangers turned into this. He is enraged, and let's see if he is going to. Sentra, pick high or low. Give me a high or low.
Low.
All right. And it rolls low. He turns completely around from you to focus on David. He's giving you his back. That's an attack of opportunity for you. You can choose once again to try to hit him with a weapon or use any of the magic that you have at your disposal.
I want to hit him with the staff on the back of his head really hard.
Okay, so go ahead and roll, or let's see, give me a number between 1 and 20.
Oh, Caleb.
Pick a number.
13.
All right, I was thinking 8. That's close enough to hit, seeing as how he's giving you his back. And let's see, I will go ahead and roll the damage. Okay, 1. You hit him in the back of his head.
You punched his head.
1 point of damage. But the beautiful thing is that was your attack of opportunity. You now have your actual turn now is up. So you have your options once again.
Oh, God. Pete Booker's, I'm not doing very well with this one. Let me attack again. Let me go again.
Again with the staff? I can see this.
Yeah.
Shoot him. Shoot him.
Okay.
With what am I shooting him with? I don't have a gun.
Magic missile.
You have a magic missile.
Oh,
it's literally
okay,
a spell where you hold out your hand and fire a projectile of energy straight and narrow right in.
Oh, let me do that. Let's do a magic missile.
All right. Magic missile is an automatic hit. It's just a matter of rolling for the damage out of 4. And you hit him for a perfect 4. You blast him straight in the back, causing him to fall. Let's see, stagger forward. And he doesn't trip and fall over Ace, but he steps on Ace, giving Ace a nice little piece of 1 damage just from getting stepped on by his boss. Mm-hmm. And that brings all the turns back around to you, David. You now have 1 guy unconscious and bleeding on the ground. You have another guy who is spending his half a turn to try to get back to his feet. And the big boss man himself has just come flailing forward, stumbling over his compatriot on the floor. What do you want to do?
Does this guy look like he's about to attack me, or have I got a moment to actually say something before he comes my way?
I'm basically going to challenge him.
I'm like, you know.
Go ahead and give me a bluff
down
check.
Down on your knees, sunshine. We don't take this kind of shit from you.
Yeah, that's shit. That's an intimidation check.
Intimidation check. Yep.
Yeah, give me a 1 through 20.
We're going to go 4.
Ooh, no, I just rolled a 13 for him.
Oh, okay, didn't work.
He is so enraged that he is not taken in. He actually...
But is he coming my way or is he still turning back towards Faebella?
No, he got kind of spun around from her. So he is kind of stumbling your way, but since you called out to him, you've now got his attention. But luckily it's still... But you haven't moved. Speech is a free action, so you still have an attack.
In which case, yeah, if he's still looking belligerent and he's not taking the hint, yep, I'll give him a good old taste of steel and shut him up.
Okay.
Can I try and render him unconscious, or do I just hit him?
So you want to do subdual damage? Is that what you want to do?
Yeah, I don't actually want to. I don't want to shed too much blood here. So yeah, I'll try and subdue.
Okay. All right, go for it. Give me a number between 1 and 20.
9.
All right, and then you get the +1. He rolled a 10. I will let you have a yeah. So you're just trying to maybe bash him with the with the hilt of your sword or something like that. Just
yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So you I mean, are you trying to tackle him down, or are you just trying? Are you trying to whack him to scare him a little bit, or like kind of describe your actions?
If it was me, I'd hit him with the butt end of my sword. I'd hit him with the pommel, just to So I want to bruise him. I want to pull him up short. Right. I don't actually.
That's
going
to pull
the
damage down to a D6 from a D10 since you're using it improvised.
Yep.
All right, you give him 5 points of subdual damage. I'm going to see if that affects his mentality. No, he rolled a natural 20 as far as a bluff check goes on that.
Okay.
He is just getting more and more pissed. Let's see. Lundy is his turn. He's pretty much out of it. If you could be, if you were interested in saving him, like he's losing a hit point per turn here. He is below zero at this point. Ace is seeing this and he is squirming backwards. He is not looking like he's quite sure what to do. And he squirms right into Sintra as he's going back. However, this brings us over to Brisbane's turn. He is going to attack David. Yeah, he definitely hits. Mm-hmm. And he hits you for 4 damage. So go ahead and subtract 4.
Takes me down to 11.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he swung his big old club at you there.
Tis a flesh wound. I've had worse.
And that brings Decentra's turn. You have one of the guy Ace, one of the henchmen. He has managed to kind of crawfish his way backwards into your feet, and his boss is just you just saw his boss land a clubbing blow, literally, to the other guy in the bar that's fighting these goons. What do you want to do?
I want to I want. Good at this. I want to take out the guy that's coming back to me.
Okay, well, he is prone. Not quite wounded enough.
Or are you going to cast a spell on him?
Yeah, he's not quite weak enough for you to coup de grace, but he is definitely, I mean, his AC is pretty desperate right now. So, yeah, I mean, you can either try to drive your staff down on him, or you can, well, you use your magic missile. So you've got.
Use the stuff.
I think the rest of your spells are all kind of support magic. So
yeah, we'll all do right, the so stuff. You got your.
Yep. All right, go ahead and give me a number between 1 and 20.
5.
Okay, no, you definitely do not. He manages to actually kind of just bat the staff away. And let me do it. He tries to kind of use that momentum to roll over and get back up, but he is still, it's just too crowded in there. There's too many tables and legs and stuff blocking him. But yeah, he kind of looks up in time, sees you bringing it down, and just kind of reaches up and just shoves your staff out of his face. That brings it back over to David. You just tasted some cold, hard club sandwich.
That guy on the floor is kind of bleeding, so I'm going to need to do something about him, but I need to deal with his boss. So time to stop pussyfooting around. I'm just going to take a swing at the boss.
Okay, go for it. Let me see. All right, hit me.
14.
Okay, good enough. That does hit. And let's see where I put it.
D10 plus 1.
Yep. So that is going to be a total of 6 damage to him. He is, you hit him very square across the chest and some of the top of the blade, kind of catching across the jaw a little bit. And he is starting to lose a good deal of blood out of his face. Let's see. Ace is going to try and get up. Oh, critical fumble. He rolls a 1. Yeah, he cannot. He has found himself somehow pinned down by like his own stupidity. He cannot figure out how to roll around and get back up. He's prone in front of you, Sentra. Go ahead and take an attack of opportunity against him if you want to.
All right, down with the staff.
All righty.
I'm so not okay, good with the staff.
Give me a number between 1 and 20 on this.
3.
And that is exactly what you needed. You critical. Let's see, given his disposition on the ground. All right. Give me a high and low, by the way.
High
or low. Okay. You bring it right down into his throat.
Oh, look at that.
And you can kind of feel like his throat kind of get crushed under it. He goes completely wall-eyed. And you can kind of hear him taking in really hollow, you know, breaths, but he is dying. It is very obvious to see. His arms go limp on the ground, and he's just kind of looking up, waiting to see the light. And that brings us all the way back around one more time to the boss man, who's bleeding out the face. He is going to try to go for David. He rolls a 2. He's not going to make that. And Sintra, it's now your turn again. The dude in front of you, by the way, is fucking dead.
Oh, look at that, Bookers. Yeah, I killed somebody. I did not die. I did not die.
You killed the first goon.
You got the first kill. Awesome.
Ah, Faye Bella rules. All right, go on. I feel so vindicated right now.
It's your turn, by the way.
Oh, it's my turn. What am I doing now? I've already killed the dude.
Well, the only thing that's left is the boss. And he is standing there still kind of trying to bully David into the wall there a little bit, but he is, you know, you can see that he's losing a lot of blood out of his face. You can tell he's definitely on the losing end of this exchange, but he's still on his feet and he seems like he's just getting angrier and angrier as he goes. So the floor is yours.
Could I use the staff to sweep his feet out from underneath him?
That is a precise move. You'll take a lot of negatives trying it, but yes, you can definitely attempt that.
I'm on a high now. I've killed a dude. Let's go for it.
All righty. Go ahead and pick a number for me.
16.
All right. And give me a high or low one more time.
High.
Okay. You managed to put a trip hazard in front of him. Not so much a perfect sweep, but you do manage to kind of move in front of him. Let's see. He rolls a 10 on his athletics check, given the bloodied face, limited vision. He steps right through it and falls forward. David, take an attack of opportunity because he is lunging right through your threat space.
Go, David!
Can I do that as a subdue? I don't actually want to kill the guy, but...
Oh, come on. Kill!
He might know some good stuff. He might be useful to us. No.
Come on!
Go ahead. You can do it if you want to.
Yeah, I'm going to try and subdue.
All right.
I'll roll an 8.
That's good enough. Given that you can almost just kind of do a subdued coup de grace with this guy because he's in that bad of shape. As he's lunging forward, you're able to bring the handle of your sword down across his jaw, across his face, which is already pretty injured. And it puts him right down on the ground. And he's done. His club rolls out of his hand. He's out of fight.
Kick the club out of his way so he can't get it again.
And, of course, this would be your last opportunity if you wanted to. Well, you're looking around the room. I mean, you can see the one guy is dead. The guy Ace is definitely dead.
Lundy looks like he's dying.
You get the idea that Lundy is still taking in some weak breaths if you're interested in trying to save him. And
he's just a thug. He doesn't deserve to die for being an idiot. It's his boss I'm annoyed at.
And yet you won't kill him. I'm a good guy.
No, I'm a good guy. I am going to offer up a prayer and lay on hands.
How many hit points? You have 11 hit points to play with. How much? Let's see. He's at -8. So,
Jesus.
you're going to have to give up 9 points to bring this guy up to 1. If you want to save.
He's not worth it, Mandrake.
Yeah, I know. I'm chaotic enough to say, actually, yeah, no, I took a pretty solid hit from his boss, and I'm more interested in the boss. So I'm going to focus my attention on this Brisbane guy, and I'm holding him at sword point. I want to know what the hell's going on with this guy. And
all right, well, Lundy, you hear a death rattle from behind you. Woo-hoo! You know, about 10 seconds later, as Lundy joins Ace. Mm-hmm. On the other side, they have a whole new.
I'm not proud about this, but I'm doing it for the greater good. I want to know what the hell's going on, so I'm going to interrogate the boss.
Oh, Faye Bell is doing a little dance of joy. Oh yeah, two down.
All right. He rolls over. And he's looking up at you. Let me see. Go ahead and shoot your shot there, man. What are you trying to do with him?
I'm going to leave my sword on his chest. What the hell are you doing? What do you think you're doing here, Sunshine? What's the deal?
So going for intimidation or more of a bluff? What are you trying to?
We'll go for intimidate.
All right. Give me a. Oh, he critical fumbles on his sense motive. So yeah, he pretty much just starts immediately just saying, "Hey, you know, this is just what I do, man. You know, it's just me and Ace and Lundy. We just run around the town, you know, and we just kind of hassle folks. It's not a big thing, you know. It's just kind of what I do. Yeah, you know,
guys to rumble with this time."
It's like, yeah, you know, I'm real sorry, man. You know, it's just, please don't kill me. All right. Like, it's just, you know, don't kill me. All right.
All right. Well, you pay the bartender for the damage to the bar, and then you clear off out of here.
As he is trying to stagger up to his feet and everything like that, two town guards come walking in, and these guys are, you know, you can tell both of you have traveled enough to definitely tell when this is, you know, a shit show of a town force. I mean, they both have letters of mark, basically, you know, on their chests, but I mean, they're wearing patched together armor. Some of it's leather, some of it's scale. Like, they don't, you know, nothing is uniformed or issued or organized. One's holding a mace, one's holding, you know, a short sword. But they are the official town guard. They immediately walk in and they're looking around. They see two dead bodies. and right away, they look at you and they're like, "You two stay where you are. Don't you move. Don't you go anywhere." And the other one yells over to the bartender, "What happened in here?" And the bartender looks up and it's like, "Oh, I don't know. You know, Brisbane came in just kind of doing his usual thing. And then all of a sudden, the one in the shiny armor over there just started swinging a sword at him. And the creepy looking chick in the robe there just started launching fireballs around my place. You know,
can I sleep in the bed?
And you can do whatever you want.
I can breathe.
Officers, yeah, these thugs were trying to extort money from us, and we decided we didn't want to pay.
Oh yeah, he got all up in my grill.
They look at each other and they're like, "If you knew who his father was, you just paid the goddamn bar tab." They kind of look at each other, figure out what they want to do. They kind of share some eye conversation before looking back at you, brandishing their weapons towards you, like, "Well, we're just gonna have to take you guys in. This is gonna have to get sorted out. This is gonna have to get sorted out, you know, at City Hall."
Well, it just so happens I'm looking to go and see the mayor anyway. Hey, I'll grab that notice off the board, wave it at them.
As soon as you reach for the notice, one of the guys there, he has an itchy mace finger, I guess, and you feel a warm thud in the back of your head before everything kind of goes dim. Okay. Sentry, you see one of the guards just sit there and pretty much, like, you know, knock him out from behind. They look at you. "You got anything funny you want to try?"
Can I just grab some beer to go before we go?
They're like, "No, but you can help carry your friend over there."
Can't do it. Can't do it.
Can't lift him. No. As you're bending, as you're saying that, you feel a metallic thud into your stomach as you realize one of the guards has stepped forward very quickly and driven the handle of his short sword into your diaphragm. And the world kind of swims out of focus. Oh, yes. These guys are...
The guards, the lycra, are a bit of a bastard. This is not on. I'm a girl. What the hell?
I mean, maybe one of the guards was the girl that hit you. You know, I never specified. Oh. You know. Either way,
specified gender.
Either way, you guys both wake up chained to a bench. About
wouldn't be the first time. Sorry.
That's why you chose to play an elf. Now it all makes sense.
So yeah, you guys both wake up chained to a bench, and standing in front of you is the first, like, actually seemingly neatly well-dressed individual that you've seen since coming into this town. He is an enormously obese gentleman, but he is wearing, you know, he's human. He is wearing noble clothing. You can definitely tell from, without even having to roll, you know, checks for it. You can, you've seen folks like him as you were coming down from the north, and he looks very, he looks kind of, I don't know, kind of confused as to what he wants to do with you two. But you finally do. You do not, you do detect. Maybe
detect
almost
Sintra, but
I mean, you definitely detect Sintra. You detect a taint. I would almost want to say a tainted neutrality. So yes, there is a wickedness there, but it's also, it's not a active evil.
Not fully okay.
The perception that you kind of get from it is that he does not believe himself to be evil. Right. And not in the sense of, you know, evil people don't see themselves as evil, but more in the sense of he legitimately thinks he's doing, you know, I guess the best that he can do.
Yeah, he's doing the best he can rather than doing the right thing.
Right. He's more selfish and greedy than, let's say, malicious and cutthroat. But he looks at you too and is like, well, this is just a fine. How do you fucking do today? It's bad enough that I have to be assigned to this shithole city. It's bad enough that I have to deal with miscreants tearing up the closest thing to a gastropub that they have down here. And then I get down there and
there's no facilities here. But
yeah, and then I get down there and I think to myself, I say, maybe they killed a couple of these piece of crap townies and it'll make my life so much easier. And then I get down there and I see that you had to kill two of Brisbane's idiot friends. And God, I hate him, but his father is in charge of the militia. And we walk this horrible, delicate line together. Oh, this is such, this place, the Vespers are calling me home. I hate it here.
Well, maybe I can help you. There was a notice maybe saying that you were looking for someone to go and sort out what's happening with these kidnapped kids. Maybe I can help you. So
the mayor is looking for that. I am the magistrate. I am Magistrate Redmond of the House Redmond of the capital city of Symphony. I was just sent down here because they've been complaining so much that we thought they might try to rebel. I don't know why anybody up north cares. Let them rebel, I say. But they say, Redmond, they say, you can't let them rebel because we need their taxes. And I say, why do we even need their the taxes aren't worth the price of my boots, but still. And here I am. But yes, the mayor is incompetent.
It's shocking that a man of your stature gets sent to such a place like this. But tell me then,
we drew straws. We drew straws, and I drew the shortest straw of all the straws. And hence, I'm down here in Lycra. But just temporarily, because if this works, and you rescue these stupid children, then I can go back to Symphony a hero. And I will never have to come down here and smell these people again. So you...
Then everyone will be happy.
The two of you did really good in there. The Brisbane guy, believe it or not, he's probably like the toughest guy in town. And you guys mopped the floor with him and his goons. They've been terrorizing that bar forever.
No, to be fair, I was really bad with the stuff. I didn't really mop. David did the mop. Or Mandrake did the mopping. I sort of just...
Who's David?
Him.
But yeah. So it's like, so that's what I was thinking was, hey, instead of counting on Brisbane's father to hunt down these child abductors, how about I just send you two? And then everybody wins. And then I can just tell his dad that I sent you out there as your punishment. Like, that's your punishment for beating up his half-wit son. And everybody wins. It's perfect.
I think we can work with it. Is there anything you know about the kidnappers so far? Is there anywhere that the local militia think that we should start?
Well, this is what we know and how we know it. So, children started disappearing from this city about 6 months ago. It all happened when this comet came by. I'm not sure if you guys remember that. It was a big thing. Mm-hmm. They went nuts out there in the woods dancing around their fires that night. But yeah, that's when the kids started vanishing around here. And at first, who cares, right? You know, towny kids just grew up to be towny adults and they're all awful. But a lot of them started missing. And then one of them came back, proving that even the kidnappers don't want towny kids. But this one came back and he mentioned...
Truly.
He came back and he mentioned that in the old abandoned abbot out there in the woods that we didn't even know was there. I had to go and talk to you know, like this like Brisbane's friends. But apparently, yeah, there's this old abandoned abbey out there. And this kid, before he dropped down and did the world a favor and died, said that that's where they were taken. They were taken out there by people in robes because they're looking for. And then he just started rambling about rebirths and fallen kings and the true meaning of Aurus Tor. I stopped listening at that point because, well, he was a towny kid. But if the other kids are there and we're able to rescue them, bring this cult down, then, like I said, I get to go home. You two can get paid. Everybody wins.
All I heard was paid. Unless there's a bounty on this, I'm not interested.
Oh, I can pay. I can definitely pay. I have money. It's just no good here because there's nothing in Lycra to buy.
But the payment can get me out of here. So how much are you talking? That's all I'm interested in is the money. I don't give a crap about the children. They're not my business. But if I can rescue them to get the money, meh, whatever, just the money.
I'll pay you one platinum coin for every child that you bring back. And that's I'll pay you two platinum coins for every dead cult member that you bring back.
Huh.
So, yeah, there's a lot to be made there.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, if you can supply us with a cart to stack them up on, I'm sure we can bring them back. Otherwise, we can tell you where the bodies are when we've dealt with them and bring you the kids.
Here's what we'll do. Let's see. He hands you a very early kind of, I guess it would kind of be like a signal flare to D&D. Term. So think of probably some of that liquid fire type potion deal that can be kind of launched up basically as a signal.
Okay.
He says, from here, we'll be able to see this. The abbey is not that far into the woods. Once you're done, fire up the flare and we'll send out a couple of carts to pick up the kids and pick up the corpses. And maybe they'll all be corpses. And either way, everybody wins.
If we kill a kid, do we still get the money for it?
I mean, I'm not going to ask them.
But we're not trying to kill the kids.
No, but if we're not trying to kill the kids.
We kill the bad guys.
If a cult member kills them or if you kill them, I mean, look, it's not like I'm going to spend the money to hang somebody. I'm not going to know. So
per body, I'm just going to get paid per body, whether it's living or dead. It doesn't really matter, does it?
Per living child or per dead cult member. So try not to kill. The more living kids you bring back, the more money you'll make.
So dead kid I don't get paid for. Look, let's say I need to know.
Yeah, I can't pay you for dead kids, right? The one that came staggering back used to drop dead. I didn't make a dime off of it.
But what if I say a cult member killed it? It's not my fault.
You sure not going to get paid for it? Then you'll get paid for
the kids. We're not going to get paid for.
You'll get paid for the dead cult member, though.
Well, I'm going to leave Mandrake to get the kids, though, because then he was like a bit soft in the tavern with the killing process. So
yeah, he's a bit soft in his pants. We can tell. That's all right.
I'm going to leave him with the kids because he looks so far more in the soft kitty section, and I'll go the cult members, and I'll be able to kill them.
Yes, kill them and save the kids and get paid. And then I get to go back to Stephanie. And I never have to see Lycra again in my entire life.
Excellent.
Then we have an agreement. I'll take care of the children. I'll bring them home safe. You be the my partner. Colleague Faye Bella here will go and massacre cultists.
Excellent.
And all will be happy. Yes?
Excellent.
So it'd be good if you kind of unlocked us and let us out of here.
And can I have a dagger?
He looked kind of, it's like, you're getting very asky here. He's like,
well,
let me see
you
what
want them dead. Dead or you don't want them dead. Remember?
He's like, I want to go back to Symphony. That's all I want. I just, this is the way we're going to do that. So he does unchain you. We'll go ahead and say that just to make it short and simple, that this counts as a full night's rest. So your health is restored.
Cool.
And your magic, you got your magic missile back there, Sintra.
Thank you.
You got all four for it. So kind of notionalized forward. Yeah. He does supply you guys with a couple of things to help you out. He asked you, David, if you want to upgrade your sword to anything a little bit better.
I think if I'm going after cultists, yes, something a little more heft and chop to it would be good.
But you don't.
he offers you. He offers you a warhammer as one option. And that's kind of, he has pretty much what he has. He has a warhammer that he says, you know, he can trade you your sword for if you want to take the warhammer. The warhammer would be a D12, so it would be an upgrade. Mm-hmm. And he says he thinks it's enchanted, but then he makes some comment about how the idiot townies and Lycra don't know how to enchant things, so he's not sure.
Yeah, no, that's got a good heft to it. Yep, I'll trade.
All right, so you can swap out your bastard sword, put down a warhammer, and that will be. You don't know it yet, but it does have a +1 smite to it.
Okay.
Ooh.
So it hits D12 +2.
If it has anything, yeah, so it would be a D, counting your strength, and then it has a +1. If it hits anything that is evil, it will automatically apply like kind of a weak version of smite evil.
Nice.
To
you have been smited.
And Sintra, he offers you. He has a couple of options for you. There's the plain dagger that you requested. Also says that he can offer you a short bow or a crossbow. That might be better for someone who's not supposed to be getting right up on in the mix of things.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll take the crossbow. I can do the archery. I am an archery person. Totally on board with that.
All right, so you have that. You can go ahead and give it that. We'll say that's a D8 weapon, and it has 30. You get a quiver of 30, you know, short bolts.
Yeah.
Just so the way that weapon works is, you know, you can have one loaded. Once you fire it, though, you always have to take a half action to reload it. So that would mean that in combat, you would not be able to move, reload, and shoot. You could reload and shoot, or you could move and reload, but then not shoot.
Okay.
That's just kind of the way those kind of weapons work. All right. So,
okay.
As the morning comes, you know, you've kind of been given a map of the region to kind of look at. You can see that where the Abbey is supposed to be located out in the woods, it is not that far. It should be about one day travel. You are not offered any kind of horses or ponies or anything like that to ride. Apparently this town does not have them because they ate them. So
sounds about right. It sounds right for the place. Yeah, we're not going to get much help from anyone. I mean, if there's enough time, I mean, are there many people out in the streets, or is it just literally dead around there?
Well, this is what's happening. So do you guys want to carry this into next week?
I kind of do. How
long have we been? I don't think we're going to be able to keep this within an hour at this point.
We're sitting right on the cusp right now.
All right. We'll finish up. We'll finish up in town, and then we will to be continued as you guys set out for the Abbey.
That sounds good.
All right. Yeah, so David and Cintra, if you guys want to conduct. Yeah, if you guys want to conduct any business in town, you can go ahead and do that now.
I just wanted to ask around if anyone's seen any of the, seen which way the kids went. Had anyone else seen that kid who came back?
So go ahead and let me see. We'll say that you talked to three people that are willing to talk to you at all, that don't just immediately All right. Go ahead and give me a high. Yeah, we'll break this into four pieces. Give me a low, a low high, or a high high. Breaking into quarters, basically.
High low.
Okay, high low for the first one. Okay, for the second person.
Low high.
Okay, and for the third person.
High high.
All right, so you got two out of three.
Hey.
One person completely didn't want to talk about it. Either they didn't know anything or they just did not want to speak of it to a stranger. But you found that two people, you know, once you sat down and kind of showed them that warm palate any kind of way, and maybe it's just because you're a half elf and they just fetishize y'all a little bit.
It's the ears.
Yeah, it must be. Because all they got to look at is like orcs and dwarves and shit. And, you know, like if you're looking for some strange as a human, those are not going to be your first stops. Maybe a gnome if you want to get really weird, but so yeah. So one of them looks at you and they do tell you that one of them does actually say they did see the child when they came back into the town, came wandering in. Sadly, let me see if it goes well for you or not. Sadly, that child was an orphan, so nobody really cried too hard for them, but. Yeah, they did see it come in. They did hear the child mention the people in robes out in the woods, out in the church. The other person you talk about is able to kind of corroborate more on the church itself. They claim that out when they've been out hunting, that they have actually seen the abbey and immediately got that sensation like when you're out in the woods and you suddenly get scared. Think back to when you're like a little kid and you go out and you're playing in the woods or you're playing just in some area that you're not really familiar with and you're having a great time until all of a sudden you kind of slow down the pace a little bit and you realize you should, that, you know, you really shouldn't be where you are. That's how they kind of described it. They said they're an experienced woodsman. They'd never experienced that feeling before, but as soon as the church came into view,
they got creeped out.
They started feeling like they were being watched from every direction. And they said, as they hiked very quickly back to town, they kept feeling like something was right behind them the whole way, but every time they turn around, there'd be nothing there.
I sense a nest of evil that may need to be cleansed. Hmm.
Maybe. So yeah, so you get a pretty good picture. I
brought my smiting axe with me. Damn. Well, Warhammer will have to do.
Cintra, any anything that you want to do?
What I want to do in town before we endeavor out on our adventure. Is that I need to find three things. I want to find new boots. I want to find a flagon of beer and a satchel of seeds that I can eat to keep my energy up.
All right. We'll notionalize the seeds, like I said, just to kind of move things along. You know, we'll say that you guys have the daily ration that you need, you know, for journeying on the road.
Right.
That's too easy. The boots, that's fine. We didn't really do money on this one, so I can, you know, we'll say you ask the mayor, or not the mayor, but the magistrate there, and he is more than happy, almost too eager to help you get new boots. In fact, he asks if he can be the one to put on your feet. So you can feel about that. You can feel about that how you like.
Yes, baby. But,
All right. So yeah, he hooks you up with a new pair of boots. He was probably expecting y'all to like shake him down a lot more. So he's not that bothered by any of this. And finally, you want to go get beer. Well, are you and David together? Are you guys together right now or are you guys split?
Are we going?
Why don't we hang out?
We're going to the bar. You want to get something to drink. So are you guys hanging out or are you guys kind of on separate errands?
Oh, no, we'll go together.
We'll stay together.
Well, as you two walk into the bar, you both suddenly stop as you realize that they are holding the they are holding the wake for poor Ace and Lundy in the bar. As you both walk in, all the townspeople turn and look back at you.
Sog.
Yeah.
He started it.
We'll leave you guys to it.
He started it. It wasn't me. I just wanted a beer. God damn it.
As you say that, Ace's elderly great grandmother turns around and is like, I would have just bought you a beer, dear. You didn't have to kill Ace. He was the only one who knew how to make my ointments. Now who's going to take care?
Not my problem, Netta. He started it. I'm out.
That is true. Fuck Ace. All right. So,
oh, look, if I've got a couple of coins spare in my coin pouch, I'll offer what there is to the grieving relatives and apologize for killing the kid.
Oh, let's see how that goes. All right.
Paladin hiker.
Go ahead and pick a number there, David, between
I'll go 12.
Damn, I rolled a 13 on that.
Nana
looks up at you and she's like, "You're not the one who killed him, and I understand. And you let that Lundy thing die, and I do kind of appreciate that. So you're a sweet boy."
It's not much, old lady, but there you go.
Mandrake, you're such a butt kisser.
God. Oh, they love
you.
Mandrake.
Do right by people, they do right by you. That's how it works.
Oh, God. It's just not right. So,
as you guys start making your way out towards the town gates, for the path that would point out toward the woods and the abbey that lies beyond it.
Towards where we think the abbey is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Many things are swimming about in the underbelly of the unseen. And we shall get to that and more next week.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned, bookers. We're going to get there.
Oh, how'd I go? Was I all right?
You did really good.
You did really well.
I felt like I was getting a bit of a swing going on, but that Mandrake, man, how soft are you making him?
He's chaotic.
He's a good paladin. Pretty soft. Yeah, like they are. You know, if he was lawful good, it would be
mushy
even worse.
On the inside, they have to be.
Now I'm on some like voyage to go kill cult members and save children with, you know, the Marshmallow Man. What the hell?
Yeah, well, you're the getting Marshmallow paid. Man in a full suit of armor who could take it and give it out. Thank you very much.
The one thing I would tell you that most of us learn is that lawful good, in D&D, lawful good or even chaotic good does not equate to lawful nice or chaotic nice. There are some lawful good characters out there that are absolute bastards. Like I told you about the one paladin that I played, he was lawful good, but he was a total fucking prick. And when he saw something that needed smiting, he was absolutely ruthless. So yeah, don't always confuse good with nice.
Good guys usually do the right thing, but they're not always nice guys.
All right. I will. I'm in the
tavern. You guys just made these characters. You guys are going to flesh out and grow into them a little bit more as their personalities blossom and bloom. You know, you'll find, you know, like I said, tonight was the training wheels night, but you both did, you know, spectacular. Since for your first time playing, you adapted to the RP aspect very well. What more can I say? I told you you'd be good at this. I told you.
It's a little to adjust to. I will say that, guys and bookers, that I write, but I don't. That whole where you go, like I didn't even read those sorts of books that did the, you know, choose your own ending books because I couldn't think like that. It's not the way I think. So I was pushed out of my comfort zone with this, but I'm kind of in the swing of it. I love the tune.
That's me strumming my lyre. Yes, I play the lyre in real life, bookers, and that was me playing. I was going to play it more during the campaign, but I was just having so much fun with you two that I was just like, fuck the lyre.
And I got into the swing of it. At this first start, you were really confusing me with the rolling of the dice and where the numbers sit and all this sort of stuff. But by the time, you know, you sort of got into it, I got a groove going. I could follow along.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you guys had your own dice, I mean, if you go out and get yourself a D20 dice between now and next week, you know, we can just roll. You know, you guys are trusting me; I trust you.
I have spent all week trying to find my old dice bag. It is somewhere in here, but I could not find that sucker. I've been looking.
Or if you get the app on your phone, you can also get a dice roller app on your phone.
Oh, cool.
Too easy.
Okay.
That way, maybe we can maybe streamline that just a little bit more. I mean, if you start saying everything you roll is a 20, I'm going to be like, we're going back to my way. I trust you both not to cheat at the game. So,
well, I must say, Caleb, I thoroughly loved the scenario that you set up in the town and the details that you went into. I love it. It was really, really thorough. And thank you for making it dumbed down for me to follow. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Hey, you're very welcome. I enjoy coming up with it. It's a bit of an amalgamation of other campaigns that I've run in the past. I've run a lot of campaigns, and I've actually finished quite a few of them, though, which is what makes me a great DM.
Actually getting to the end of one, that's a major achievement. Oh,
it's rare.
I mean, for me, coming up with a campaign and writing scenarios, it's world building and it's storytelling. And then you have no idea as the DM what the players are actually going to do, how they're going to react. So this has taken me right back. It's been good fun.
What always happened to us is, you know, like one person would start a game and we would be very, very invested in that campaign for, you know, maybe a few weeks, even a couple of months. Mm. And then either the DM would start to kind of get that fatigue, that creative fatigue, or maybe they would just start wanting to be a player. And then you'd usually have a player or two that would be like, oh, I have a campaign idea that I wouldn't mind doing.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're like, okay, well, let's take a break from my game this week and you can do one. And then suddenly you'd have five different campaigns going and none of them would ever conclude. But I was fortunate enough to have quite a few that I actually did see through to the end. So it's always kind of special.
That's like picking up a book and reading it partway through and never getting to the end because you want to read the next book instead or do stuff. So that's I don't think me and the boys, we very rarely finished a scenario all the way to the end. We did some, but yeah, exactly as you said, we'd suddenly swap and be like, I want to have a go at being the DM, and suddenly there's a whole new set of stories. It's kind of fun. It's good because you just don't know where it's going to go. As you go along.
And now the next time I walk by my local comic book store and I see the huddle of 10 guys around a table and there's dice and there's talking and whatever else, mm-hmm. I'll be able to go, oh, I know what you're doing. Can I join?
don't scare
That's
them.
That's right.
Don't scare them. They startle easily. Be nice.
Not only will they let guys, you okay? Not only will they let you join, but you being probably the only woman at the table, they will probably just let you run over them too. You could just be like, so I want to have, you know, I want to have the best armor, the best weapons, the best spells, the familiar, all of that stuff. And there'd probably be some guy like, yes, you got it, of course. Roll a dice, and if you get, you know, if you get anything besides a 7, you get all that stuff. And then you get a 7.
So I just wear the tight jeans and the low cut top, and I'm done.
You'll have everything. You will be running that campaign. You could pretty much just sit down and be the DM. You could just be like, you know what? I'm just going to take this campaign over.
You know what?
They will be slightly drunk and putty in your paws.
That would be awesome. Awesome. All right, guys, we're going to have to wrap this up. This has been delightful.
We are. And so next week we're going to head off to the Abbey and kick some butt.
Yeah, you've certainly challenged my creativity today. So I appreciate it. Thank you. I do like the challenge.
Glad you enjoyed it. We'll try. Hope, you know, maybe this won't go into a part 3, but I can't promise you it won't.
Oh, we'll see how we go. All right. So bookers, of course, where can you find us? Caleb, where can the bookers come and hunt you down?
You can find the Barter Schlock always at Banning K in 1979 on Twitter, at K_Banning_Kellum on the gram. K. Bannon Kellum, author of Horror, on Facebook. So that's right. Roll your dice. Come on down. If you get a natural 20, then you get to, you get to read my bullshit.
Ah, mm-hmm. Beautiful. David?
They'll find me at Kung Fu Ponder, pondering about martial arts and writing and stories and gaming.
Beautiful. And, of course, you can find me at Cintra Sullivan. That's with a DZ. On any of the social medias. Anybody got some book news coming up, things they're doing?
Just my new book, The Vexed and Venerated, is still hanging out there for all you happy, lucky people. Once again, yeah, look, it's a natural 20 anytime you read one of my books, right? It's always like rolling a natural 20. You just can't fucking lose. That's it.
Absolutely. I'm dropping a trailer today on Murder, They Wrote, my new book that's coming out on the 29th, where six authors go to a writing retreat. They're mystery authors, and one of them is the murderer. But which one has taken their craft beyond the pages of the book? You won't know. You won't be able to guess. So the trailer drops tonight. Book releases on the 29th. Make sure you check it out, bookers. Fantastic. It will be a fun one. All right, that's it. Yeah?
Cool. That's a wrap. It's been fun.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I loved every second of it. And see you next week, bookers. Bye.
We'll see you next week.
Good night, everybody. Bye.